"There are still elephants," Bobby said. And that was true. A handful of animals in the zoos, their seed and eggs flown back and forth in a bid to maintain viable populations. There were even zygotes of elephants and many other endangered or otherwise lost species, frozen in their liquid nitrogen tanks in the unchanging shadows of a lunar South Pole crater. Perhaps the last refuge of life from Earth, if it proved, after all, impossible to deflect the wormwood. So there were still elephants, but none in Africa. No trace of them, save the bones occasionally unearthed by the robot farmers, bones sometimes showing teeth marks left by desperate humans. In Bobby's lifetime, they had all gone to extinction, the elephant, the lion, the bear, even man's closest relatives, the chimps and gorillas and apes. Now, outside the homes and zoos and collections and labs, there was no large mammal on the planet, none save man. But what was done was done. With an effort of will, Bobby grasped his brother's viewpoint and rose straight upward. As they ascended in space and time, the shining fields were restored. The children dwindled to invisibility, and the farmland shrank to a patchwork of detail, obscured by mist and cloud. And then, as Earth receded, the bulbous shape of Africa itself, schoolbook familiar, swam into Bobby's view. Farther to the west, over the Atlantic, a solid layer of clouds lay across the ocean's curving skin, corrugated in neat gray-white rows. As the turning planet bore Africa toward the shadow of night, Bobby could see equatorial thunderheads spreading hundreds of kilometers toward the land, probing purple fingers of darkness. But even from this vantage, Bobby could make out the handiwork of man. There was a depression far out in the ocean, a great cappuccino swirl of white clouds over blue ocean. But this was no natural system. It had a regularity and stability that belied its scale. The new weather management functions were slowly reducing the severity of the storm systems that still raged across the planet, especially around the battered Pacific Rim. To the south of the old continent, Bobby could clearly see the great curtain ships working their way through the atmosphere, the conducting sheets they bore shimmering like dragonfly wings as they cleansed the air and restored its long-depleted ozone. And off the western coast, pale masses followed the line of the shore for hundreds of kilometers, reefs built up rapidly by the new breed of engineered coral, laboring to fix excess carbon and to provide a new sanctuary for the endangered communities of plants and animals which had once inhabited the world's natural reefs, long destroyed by pollution, overfishing, and storms. Everywhere, people were working, repairing, building. The land, too, had changed. The continent was almost cloud-free, its broad land gray-brown, the green of life suppressed by mist. The great northern mass, which had been the Sahara, was broken by a fine tracery of blue-white. Already, along the banks of the new canals, the glow of green was starting to spread. Here and there, he could see the glittering, jewel-like forms of power pipe plants, the realization of Hiram's last dream, drawing heat from the core of Earth itself. The energy bounty, free and clean, which had largely enabled the planet's stabilizing and transformation. It was a remarkable view, its scale and regularity stunning. David said it reminded him of nothing so much as the old dreams of Mars, the dying desert world restored by intelligence. The human race, it seemed, had gotten smart just in time to save itself. But it had been a difficult adolescence. Even as the human population had continued to swell, climatic changes had devastated much of the world's food and water supply, with the desertification of the great grain regions of the U.S. and Asia, the drowning of many productive lowland farming areas by rising sea levels, and the pollution of aquifers and the acidification or drying of freshwater lakes. Soon, the problem of excess population went into reverse as drought, disease, and starvation culled communities across the planet. It was a crash only in relative terms. Most of Earth's population had survived, but as usual, the most vulnerable, the very old and the very young, had paid the price. Overnight, the world had become middle-aged. New generations had emerged into a world that was recovering, still crowded with aging survivors, and the young, scattered, cherished, worm-cam-linked, regarded their elders with increasing intolerance, indifference, and mistrust.